Okay.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Today, an indictment was unsealed, charging Donald J. Trump with felony violations of our national security laws, as well as participating in a conspiracy to obstruct justice.
Authorities are ramping up security in Miami, where Donald Trump's scheduled to surrender to face felony charges Tuesday for retaining and mishandling classified documents, including top secret information about U.S. nuclear weapons and secret plans to attack a foreign country. We'll get the latest on the 37-count indictment against the former president. Then as Pride Month celebrations continue, we look at a remarkable new documentary that explores the lives of intersex people. It's called Everybody.
Society generally considers that biological sex is cut and dry. Actually, it's not cut and dry. We don't fall neatly into that male-female box. I was born intersex, and although I was born with a vagina, I was also born with internal testes.
We live in a society that's so binary. So it's an intersex person. Where do I fit?
In a broadcast exclusive, we'll speak to the director of Everybody, the Oscar-nominated filmmaker Julie Cohen, as well as three intersex activists featured in the film. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Ukraine says it recaptured four villages in the eastern Donetsk region after President Volodymyr Zelensky confirmed Saturday Ukraine's long-awaited counteroffensive has begun.
It is important that Russia always feels it. They do not have much time left, in my opinion. Counteroffensive and defensive actions are taking place in Ukraine. At what stage, I will not say in detail.
Zelensky also said the International Criminal Court has opened an investigation into last week's Kakhovka Dam breach, which triggered an environmental disaster and killed at least 14 people. Federal and local law enforcement agencies say they've stepped up security and are monitoring online threats from far-right supporters of Donald Trump ahead of his appearance at a Miami federal court Tuesday. Trump is facing criminal charges for taking classified documents to his Mar-a-Lago estate when he exited the White House. At Georgia's Republican state convention over the weekend, Arizona's defeated gubernatorial candidate Carrie Lake said she and 75 million others would defend Trump, adding, quote, "Most of us are card-carrying members of the NRA. Trump, who also spoke at the Georgia convention, said he's still running for the 2024 presidency as he lashed out at the Biden administration.
Now the Marxist left is once again using the same corrupt DOJ and the same corrupt FBI and the attorney general and the local district attorneys to interfere in our elections at a level that our country and few countries have ever seen before. They're cheating, they're crooked, they're corrupt. These criminals cannot be rewarded. They must be defeated. You have to defeat them.
On Friday, the Justice Department unsealed the indictment against Trump containing 37 felony counts, including obstruction of justice and violations of the Espionage Act. Photographs released by the U.S. District Court show towering stacks of document boxes piled up in various parts of Trump's Florida resort, including a ballroom stage and a bathroom. We'll have more on this story after headlines with the nation's Ellie Mistel. In Sudan, intense airstrikes and artillery fire rattled the capital Khartoum Sunday as fighting between the army and the paramilitary rapid support forces resumed following a 24-hour ceasefire. Witnesses said at least 17 civilians were killed across the capital region. There are reports of intense fighting in several other parts of Sudan, including Darfur. On Friday, Sudan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs declared Volker Perthes, the UN envoy for Sudan, persona non grata, after Sudan's army chief Abdel Fattah al-Burhan accused him of inflaming the conflict in Sudan. Perthes defended the UN's work and said the conflict could only be blamed on, quote, the two generals at war, unquote. In South Sudan, at least 20 people were killed, 50 others injured, after fighting erupted in a camp for displaced people in Upper Nile State. The camp is home to about 50,000 people who began arriving when the civil war in South Sudan broke out a decade ago. Back in the United States, the city of New Haven, Connecticut, has reached an historic $45 million settlement with Randy Cox, a black man left paralyzed after he was handcuffed and placed in the back of a police van without a seatbelt. After the van made an abrupt stop, Cox slid headfirst into a metal partition, seriously injuring his neck and spine. Officers then ignored his pleas for help. Five officers have pleaded not guilty to criminal charges, including second-degree reckless endangerment. In Philadelphia, an elevated highway collapsed Sunday following a crash, an oil tanker truck fire on Interstate 95. No deaths or injuries are reported. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro said it could take months to repair the major East Coast artillery I-95 in both directions. New York City officials have announced a new minimum wage for food app delivery workers of nearly $18 an hour before tips. Delivery workers contracted by companies like Uber and DoorDash currently make just $11 an hour. This is Lisha Walpa of the Workers' Justice Project, which organizes the immigrant-led group Los Liberistas Unidos.
We can finally say that New York City's more than 60,000 app delivery workers who are essential to our city will soon be guaranteed a minimum pay. New York City is delivering justice for deliveristas.
Critics say the increase is still a sub-minimum wage once expenses are factored in, and blasted New York City for delaying the pay rise. App companies raked in record profits during the pandemic. In Colombia, four indigenous children were found alive in the Amazon 40 days after their plane crashed in the rainforest in early May. The siblings ranged in age from 11 months to 13 years old, survived eating plants and seeds they'd been taught were edible, like cassava. The search and rescue efforts were largely led by indigenous community members who guided Colombian troops through the region. In more news from Colombia, the National Liberation Army, or ELN, the country's largest remaining guerrilla group, and Colombian officials have signed a ceasefire agreement after months of negotiation. This is Colombian President Gustavo Petro, who's vowed to bring total peace to Colombia.
Que este firma de estos acuerdos parciales hoy.
Today, the signing of these partial agreements brings you to a ceasefire, to a point that you had never experienced in the peace talks, to a ceasefire that follows with a promise that on May 25th, on May 2025, the decades-long war between the ELN guerrilla and the state of Colombia will definitively cease.
At least 25 people in Pakistan were killed by torrential rains in country's northwest, which caused houses to collapse and trees to be uprooted. Meanwhile, authorities have put in place emergency measures as a severe and intense cyclone approaches Pakistan and India. In Somalia, over 20 people, most of them children and teens, were killed Friday in a southern town after an unexploded mortar shell detonated near where the victims were playing. More than 50 people were injured in the blast. Another six were killed Saturday during a six-hour siege of a beachside hotel by the armed group Al-Shabaab in the capital, Mogadishu. The media tycoon, billionaire, and four-time Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi has died at the age of 86. Berlusconi was first elected Prime Minister in 1994, leveraging his unrivaled influence over public opinion in Italy, where he controlled newspapers, magazines, and three major TV channels. Throughout his career, Berlusconi faced multiple criminal charges, including abuse of office, bribery, corruption, and paying for sex with an underage girl. Most of the charges ended in dismissals after Berlusconi's government passed laws shielding him from prosecution. But a tax fraud conviction in 2013 barred him from public office for 6 years. And in New York City, an unscripted Tony Awards took place Sunday evening as the Writers Guild of America strike continues. Host Ariana DuBose kicked off the ceremony by leafing through a blank script before launching into a dance number consisting of a wordless medley of Broadway hits. She went on to express solidarity with striking entertainment writers. History was made as two non-binary performers took home awards for the first time. Jay Harrison G won Best Actor in a Musical for Some Like It Hot. An emotional Alex Newell took to the stage after winning for their role in the musical Shucked.
Thank you for seeing me, Broadway. I should not be up here as a queer, non-binary, fat, black, little baby from Massachusetts. And to anyone that thinks that they can't do it, I'm going to look you dead in your face that you can do anything you put your mind to.
Are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. Coming up, we look at the 37-count indictment against Donald Trump. And then the new remarkable documentary, Everybody. Stay with us. Small Axe by Bob Marley. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Local and federal authorities are ramping up security outside the federal courthouse in Miami, where Donald Trump is scheduled to surrender to face charges Tuesday for retaining and mishandling classified documents, including top secret information about U.S. nuclear weapons and secret plans to attack another country. On Friday, the Justice Department unsealed the historic, sweeping 37-count indictment against Trump, who's become the first U.S. president to face federal criminal charges. Special Counsel Jack Smith spoke to reporters Friday.
The men and women of the United States intelligence community and our armed forces dedicate their lives to protecting our nation and its people. Our laws that protect national defense information are critical to the safety and security of the United States, and they must be enforced. Violations of those laws put our country at risk. Adherence to the rule of law is a bedrock principle of the Department of Justice, and our nation's commitment to the rule of law sets an example for the world. We have one set of laws in this country, and they apply to everyone.
The case against the former president is built in part on the secret notes of Trump's own lawyer, as well as audio recordings of Trump, where he admits he was in possession of secret information that he had not declassified. The unsealed indictment includes photographs of boxes of classified documents stored haphazardly across Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort, including a bathroom, a ballroom, and a bedroom. The federal grand jury also indicted Trump's aide, Walt Nauta, who faces six charges, including conspiracy to obstruct and withholding a record. The Trump case will at least initially be heard by federal district judge Eileen Cannon, who Trump had appointed. Last year, she sided with Trump's lawyers and appointed an outside special master to review documents seized by the FBI at Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort. Over the weekend, Trump repeatedly attacked the special counsel, Jack Smith. Trump also urged supporters to come to Miami on Tuesday. On the presidential campaign trail, several of Trump's Republican rivals, including Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and former Vice President Mike Pence, criticized the indictment of Trump. DeSantis decried what he called the weaponization of federal law enforcement. We're joined now by Eli Mistal, the nation's justice correspondent, the author of Allow Me to Retort, a black Guy's Guide to the Constitution, now out in paperback. Welcome back to Democracy Now!, Ellie.
Thanks for having me.
If you can start off by responding to the specific counts that we learned over the weekend before Trump's arraignment tomorrow on Tuesday.
Yeah, so the thing about the indictment that stands out to me is that Trump, by his own running of the mouth, ruined his best legal defense, right? Like the defense to, I took classified documents that I wasn't supposed to have and didn't give them back when you asked, is I was too stupid to know they were classified documents or to know where they were. Who could tell? I'm not me. Like, that's your actual best legal defense. And Trump blows that legal defense out of the water when he says, and they have him on tape saying, that he knows the documents are confidential. He knows that he's not supposed to be showing it to whatever staffer he's showing it to. He knows that they're not declassified, and he knows that he can't declassify them now because he's no longer president. That section of the indictment is like ballgame. That is game, set, match on Trump's only legal defense, Amy, which is why we see Trump going to all of these, let's say, extrajudicial defenses where he's attacking the special counsel, attacking the process, calling, you know, doing the whataboutism thing, and calling for his MAGA supporters to rally to his defense in Miami. He needs the MAGA supporters to rally to his defense because the law ain't gonna do it.
So where these documents were stored, and according to the indictment, Trump was personally involved in the process of packing and moving the boxes. I mean, when you have them in that bathroom by the toilet, you wonder if there was a sign on the door, take a leak, right? When you have them in the ballroom, when you have them in places that are accessed by, I mean, this isn't just his house. Mar-a-Lago is a resort where scores of people, hundreds of people have access to these spaces.
Amy, you mean you don't have a box of classified documents in your laundry room? Because I keep mine, you know, just in my walk-in closet. That's right. Look, it is ridiculous. It is almost comical, the disregard and disrespect that Trump has for our country and for our national security. Although it's not surprising that Trump acted with wanton and blatant disrespect. But I think what's kind of most important about the idea that Trump was physically, personally involved in packing and moving these documents is that he was hiding them from the FBI. Because that's the other part of this case, right? The legal trouble that he's in. It is one thing, again, kind of legally, to take classified documents and not know that they're classified, and then when you're informed that they're classified, to give them back, right? That's what a normal human does. That's what a normal former president or former vice president does. If they found that they took something that they shouldn't have, they give it back. They understand it's not theirs, it is the country's. Trump was asked to give these documents back, and not only did he not give them back, the indictment suggests that he was packing them and moving them around and hiding them from federal investigators and then lying to them and directing his lawyers to lie to them about where the documents were and how many he had. That's why Walt Nawa is also indicted. That's why his attorney, Evan Cochran, was taking personal notes to keep himself out of trouble because he understood that he was being asked to do illegal things, right? So when you look at the documents in the bathroom, on the stage, next to the gaudy chandelier, understand that this is not just a cavalier treatment of our national secrets. It's also an attempt to hide from legitimate requests from the FBI.
Over the weekend, the former Republican Arizona gubernatorial candidate, Carrie Lake, made this incendiary threat.
I have a message tonight.
She was speaking in Jewish.
For Merrick Garland and Jack Smith and Joe Biden. And the guys back there in the fake news media, you should listen up as well. This one's for you. If you want to get to President Trump, you're going to have to go through me, and you're going to have to go through 75 million Americans just like me. And I'm going to tell you, yep, most of us are card-carrying members. That's not a threat. That's a public service announcement.
Card-carrying members of the NRA, millions of them, she said, this isn't a threat. It's a public service announcement. She was speaking in Georgia, where President Trump also spoke. Ellie Mistel, your response and the response of those who continue to support President Trump, including his opposing, you'd think his opponents now in the Republican race would take full advantage of this, instead backing off.
Look, threats are all these weak, unserious, violent people have, all right? Threats are the last refuge of the bigoted white supremacists that have formed the vanguard of defending Trump. And my only response to that is that it's not 75 million Americans. Based on January 6th, it's only a few thousand of y'all cowards that we have to deal with in our pursuit of justice, and I'm sure that Jack Smith and the FBI are prepared to do what is necessary to bring Trump to trial. So I'm not worried about Carrie Lake and her aggressive vacuuming of Donald Trump's record, all right? What I think is more problematic is the fact that the entire Republican Party continues to debase itself in service of Donald Trump and in service of that white supremacist base that Carrie Lake is talking to, right? Like, as you point out, Amy, in a normal party, when one of your rivals is indicted on 37 counts of espionage, the rest of the field is like, maybe you should elect me and not the guy who just got indicted. But in the modern Republican Party, they're all theming, right? They're all like jonesing for the next hit off of Trump's white supremacist base. And so they can't risk saying mean things about Trump, even though he's just been indicted. They have to instead placate Trump, even as they purport to be running against him. It is pathetic on their part, but the debasement of one of the two major political parties in the country is an ongoing problem, because as you start to kind of work through the kind of practical realities now, not just of indicting Trump, but bringing him to trial and potentially convicting him, that becomes really hard to do if during the course of this process he is crowned the Republican standard bearer for the 2024 presidential election.
Ellie Mistel, we're going to continue to cover this tomorrow and Wednesday and continue, of course, right through the trial, if there is one. Ellie Mistel is the nation's justice correspondent. He's the author of Allow Me to Retort, A Black Guy's Guide to the Constitution. After Trump is arraigned on Tuesday, he's planning to give a major address his supporters. And also Trump supporters are planning to load buses to head to Miami from other parts of Florida, raising concerns for law enforcement who are preparing for the potential unrest around the courthouse, AP reports. Next up, as Pride Month celebrations continue, we look at a revelatory documentary that's just out, exploring the lives of intersex people. It's called Everybody. Stay with us.
On the day we sweated out on the streets of a runaway American dream, at night we ran through mansions of glory to a sign machines. Run from cables on Highway 9, chrome wheel fuel injection and stepping out over the line. Whoa, baby, this town rips the bones from your back. It's a death trap, it's a suicide drive. We gotta get out while we're young. Cause tracks like us, baby, we were born to run. Ooh, 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 ooh. Wendy, let me in. I wanna be a friend. I wanna find your dreams and visions. Just wrap your legs around these velvet rings.
Bruce Springsteen's Born to Run, performed by Amy McDonald. The song is featured in Everybody, the film, we're talking about today. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. June is Pride Month, a time to celebrate the LGBTQIA community. Today, we look at those represented by the I, which stands for intersex. In a broadcast exclusive, we're joined by the filmmaker and three stars of this revelatory new documentary that explores their lives. It's called Everybody. This is the trailer, which opens with scenes from gender reveal parties of expectant parents.
3, 2, 1
Society generally considers that biological sex is cut and dry. Actually, it's not cut and dry. We don't fall neatly into that male-female box. I was born intersex, and although I was born with a vagina, I was also born with internal testes.
We live in a society that's so binary. So it's an intersex person. Where do I fit?
The definition of intersex is any variation in a person's sex characteristics.
They told my mom, you have a child that we feel is abnormal.
And this body was a problem that needed to be fixed.
Fixed, and that I should never tell anyone about it.
It's therapeutically highly desirable to have them surgically corrected at an early age.
I just remember, like, a lot of pain.
In most cases, there is absolutely no evidence to suggest that surgery is medically necessary.
I can walk into
the doctor changed the course of my life. I did not consent to that surgery.
I had to tell the world what had happened.
We just been silent about this for so long.
I'm gonna come out today. I'm gonna tell the Texas Senate. I was born with balls.
I think we're at the cusp of something cool.
Our goal is to pass a bill to condemn these medically unnecessary surgeries.
A huge revolution starting right now.
Hey, intersex surgery!
Just existing as an intersex person is grounds for celebration. In a whole world that doesn't see us. But you know what?
I am intersex.
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 Intersex. Intersex. Intersex.
We are here now.
That's the trailer for Everybody. The documentary tells the stories of three people who've become intersex activists after childhood marked by shame, secrecy, and non-consensual surgeries. It's set to hit theaters nationwide June 30th, released by Focus Features. Today, we're joined by its director and three people it features, actor and screenwriter River Gayo, political consultant Alicia Roth-Weigel, and scholar Sean Saifa Wall. They're all working for greater understanding of the intersex community and to end unnecessary surgeries. Everybody is produced with NBC News Studios and just premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival here in New York. It's directed by Julie Cohen, the Academy Award-nominated Emmy-winning director and producer of RBG, along with Betsy West, as well as the Oscar-shortlisted Julia and the Peabody-winning My Name is Pauli Murray. Julie's past producer for Dateline NBC. We welcome you all to Democracy Now! I don't think I've seen a premiere like this. Afterwards, I was afraid, especially from the balcony, that people would fall over as they leapt to their feet, weeping, laughing, clapping. I mean, the response was overwhelming. Julie, I was wondering if we could start with you to talk about why you made this film. Talk about your choice of the people you've interviewed and the subject matter.
This film kind of started off with an archival story from the NBC News archives that really does a bunch to explain why intersex people have been medically treated and, I'd add, mistreated in the way they have. That led me pretty quickly to looking into what's going on with the modern movement for intersex rights, a movement frankly, that I was unfamiliar with in starting. And what I came across, you know, as someone who's actually looked at a fair number of activist movements, is a movement that's in the midst of truly blossoming after childhoods, youths, young adulthoods, often, of being either explicitly told or just getting a vibe that, you know, my body is something I shouldn't be talking publicly about. A group